looking at 1 Peter, we've reached a point in the message where Peter is focusing in on relationships that people had. They were relationships that were important to people, but in some cases, they were relationships that were very difficult. Peter addressed the master-servant relationship or master-slave, and he lays out what's expected of Christians who are in that position of being a slave, even though it was very difficult. Peter also addressed the marriage situation. Last week and the week before, we dug into Peter's words as he challenged the wives to live a certain way, even though their status at that time was challenging as well, to be in a relationship where their spouse may not be a Christian, but to still live the right way. And then finally, last week in verse 7, Peter addressed the husband, how the husband was to treat his wife. And we really looked at that relationship from every possible angle that you could. We looked at that relationship from an intellectual standpoint, from a physical status. We looked at it from an emotional place. And then most importantly, from the spiritual realm. And Peter addressed all of that just in that one verse. And as you look at those relationships that we still have today, being a husband, being a wife, or even in the relationships that we have with our coworkers, our employers, there's an expectation that we will live a certain way, an expectation that we will handle ourselves in all of our relationships in a way that honors God. Now that's challenging. It's a big thought, especially if we go back and rewind our lives. If we go back and rewind how we handle ourselves in our marriages, do we treat our spouse in a way that honors God? What about our bosses, our employers? Do we treat them in a way that brings honor to our Heavenly Father? There are some challenges that we have. We look at them and we quickly understand, I'm going to need help in this. I'm going to need help to humble myself. I'm going to need help to be the type of husband I need to be the type of employee that I need to be. As we move through life, we have so many different relationships that we're involved in. It's within these relationships that we really have opportunity to influence people for good, for Christ. I think the days of just going and cold knocking on doors, just on the spot and trying to set up Bible studies, that's very rare these days. But we do have opportunities. And it's within these relationships that we have where those opportunities really lie. Opportunities with people we go to school with, opportunities with people we work with. And as they look at our life, to me, the first step is for people to look at us and be able to tell, there's just something different about him. There's just something different about her. As you get to know people and they see you move through life, when you're really close to someone, they know what's going on in your life. They know if you've experienced a death in your family. They know if you're struggling financially. They know if there's difficulties that you're having as a parent trying to raise up your children. And as you share your life with people and they see you move through these inevitable struggles that just come about in life, if we handle ourselves the right way, the godly way, I can't help but think it's going to create opportunities for us. And isn't that what Peter's trying to get these Christians to do? He wants them to move forward. He wants the gospel to keep spreading. He wants people to keep having the opportunity to hear about Jesus Christ. But Peter, he understands how important it is to live it yourself. And so his message for these Christians, yeah, you're living in some tough times. That's an understatement. That's the understatement of the day. Things are tough. Things are challenging. But guys, you still have a mission. You still have responsibility to fulfill. Don't get so consumed by your individual physical struggles, by your individual physical situations, that you forget to keep moving the gospel forward. Because it's often in those struggles that we really have the chance to stand out. And so Peter, as he reaches verse 8, he starts summing things up. You know, if you're sitting here during a sermon and you hear the preacher say to sum up, you're like, all right, we're about out of here. That's what Peter does right here. He's summing up this train of thought. After he's talked to them about the master-slave relationship, after he's talked to them about the husband-wife relationship, he brings some things all together. Because those are some big topics. If you were a slave in the first century, to hear Peter talk about that, that was big. That was your life. That's what you were doing day in and day out. To hear Peter address your individual situation as a Christian wife, as a husband. You know, besides our relationship with our Father, that is the relationship, isn't it? And so Peter right now wraps up some things. To sum up, perhaps your translation reads, finally, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for this very purpose, that you might inherit a blessing. Now just stop for a moment. I want you to think about those words in connection with the relationships that Peter has just talked about. You're a first century Christian slave, and you're in the worst situation imaginable because your master is unreasonable. He treats you harshly. He's not fair. He's not a good man. And that is your plight in life, to be a slave serving a master who's horrible. And now you hear Peter say to you, all right, to sum up, if you are in that situation, be harmonious. Be sympathetic. Be brotherly. Be kind-hearted. Be humble in spirit. Now imagine that you're a wife in the first century and that the gospel has reached your doorstep. And you've heard the great story about Jesus Christ, and your husband was also right there, and your husband heard the very same thing that you heard. And you hear about this man who lived a perfect life, and he gave his life on Calvary for you. He took your place. And because of what he did, you can have all things that matter. And you can't wait to obey. You can't wait to respond. You confess his great name. You turn your life around and you're baptized into Christ. And your husband says, no, no thanks. And on top of that, your husband, he's not fair. He's not kind. And then you listen to Peter as he addresses your situation personally. He tells you, don't return evil for evil. Don't return insult with insult. It's hard to do in a marriage, isn't it, some days? Your spouse insults you. All right, here we go. Let's take off the gloves. And in that marriage relationship, this is something that I think we forget, something that we need to be reminded of. This is a statement that I always make to young couples if I'm working with them through premarital counseling. When you get to know somebody to the point that you're ready to commit to them in marriage, and then you live with them day in and day out, you know this person. You know their strengths, and you know their weaknesses. You have everything that you need at your disposal to bring your spouse very, very low. You can destroy them with your words because you know every button to push. The opposite is also true. You also know how to build them up in a way that nobody else can. And Peter, he encourages husbands and wives, no matter what situation they're in, if your spouse is being evil to you, don't return it with more evil. If your spouse is insulting you, all the easy thing is to just throw them right back. Don't do that. Don't return insult with another insult. But instead, give a blessing. Maybe we want to call time out and say, Peter, what world are you living in? This doesn't even seem possible. If you're following Christ, it is. If Jesus is the model that you're looking at, because I think all of us, there's someone or something that we're looking at in life that we're trying to imitate. I know when I was a kid, I grew up in the 80s. I always wanted to be Magic Johnson. The only thing I had in common with him was the last name, nothing else. But man, I wanted to be like him. If I was playing football, I wanted to be Roger Staubach. Foolishly, for a phase, I wanted to be Danny White, but that passed. So he kept failing. But there's people that we look at, and even as I've gotten older, that there's people that stand out to me that I admire, that do things that are hard for me to do. I admire Shannon, what she does with little kids. I walk into her classroom, I'm there about 5 seconds, I'm like, see ya. And the kids are like, please get him out of here. I'm not sure who's more scared of who. But there's people that have qualities that I don't have that I admire. And I try to imitate those. I think all of us have something or someone that we're trying to imitate. Now, what Satan is trying to get us to do, is he's trying to get us to look at the wrong role models. Maybe in a big scale of things, we could just throw the world out there. Because there's a lot of people that are out in the world that are living a sinful life, and maybe that looks appealing to us, the money they have, the power they have, the position that they have. We need the right role model. We need to be imitating our life after the right person. And when you look at what Peter writes here, all right, you're in a tough situation at work. Your marriage right now, it's really challenging, but I need you to be harmonious. I need you to be sympathetic. I want you to be brotherly, be kind-hearted, be humble. Don't return evil for evil or insult for insult. How can I do that? Well, just look at Jesus, because that's the life he lived. That's what his life looked like when he came down here to earth. You know, we could describe verse 8 and verse 9 as just a big picture of qualities that we need in our life. Starting out with this, be harmonious. You're right in the forefront. Peter sets Christian unity. I need you to be unified. Isn't it great when we have peace in our relationships? I know it is for me. I'm sure there's some people out there that really like to have the strife. Maybe they just kind of live off of that. That's not me. I like it when my relationships are in a good place, when people are at peace. You know, Peter knew this was important. And the pathway to this, it really goes all the way back to Jesus, doesn't it? If you think about Jesus when he prayed in John chapter 17, Jesus is praying that his people would be unified, that they would be on the same page together, that there wouldn't be bickering and arguing, that there wouldn't be confusion in the religious world. And in the thrilling days of the early church, that's exactly what happened. Jesus's prayer from John 17, it was fulfilled, because you see a group of people from so many different backgrounds. They could have been divided at so many different places, but somehow, some way, they became unified. For they were all of one heart and one soul. It's what Luke writes in Acts 4. And then as we get into the writings of Paul, you know, Paul was the one who would travel to these different churches that he helped establish in the name of Christ. But anytime you get people together, there's going to be issues. There's going to be problems. You know, some people, when they look at my situation, Shannon's situation, just having one daughter, so you guys had it easy. You know, the more kids you add to the mix, you know, the more arguing you have, the more fighting you have. More people you get together, typically, the more problems you're going to have. And so Paul, as he's going to these churches where you have early Christians gathered together, I mean, there were a lot of issues. It's one of the things I love about the Bible. It's just people. You know, people are people. You know, people argued in the first century just like they do today. People struggled to get along back in the time of Paul just like they do now. But Peter was reminding Christians, I want you to be harmonious. And Paul did the same thing. He reminded the Christians at Rome that though they were many, they were a part of one body. And he pleads with them to be of one mind. You find that throughout the book of Romans, throughout much of his letters. In writing to the Christians at Corinth, he uses the same picture. That picture of a body made up of many different parts, but you are unified together in that body. So he pleads with these quarreling Christians. They were arguing, they were fighting, they couldn't get along. Some were following Apollos, some were following Peter, some were following after Paul. It was just a mess, just people doing what people do. And Paul made an appeal to them. Remember who died for you guys? Remember, this is about Christ. And it's the very same thing that Peter is doing over in 1 Peter chapter 3. The only way for us to get along, the only way for us to be at peace, the only way for us to be harmonious in our relationships, we're going to follow Christ. So if we try to do it on human strength, we're going to fail. He also tells the church at Corinth that there shouldn't be strife and division. Those things are physical, they're worldly. Because they have shared the one bread, they must also be of one body. He encourages them to be of one mind and to live in peace. Remember what he wrote to the church at Ephesus in Ephesians 2. You have Jews, you have Gentiles. Right there, it's huge division. But Paul reminds them what Jesus did, that he broke down that wall of hostility that divided them. See what I'm saying? You see what Paul was writing? What Peter is writing? This is only possible through Jesus Christ. Think about the church at Philippi. You know, it just illustrates what I'm talking about. Many people believe that Paul wrote that entire letter. What a great book! What a great letter! There are many scholars who believe that Paul wrote that entire letter because of the conflict that existed between Euodia and Syntyche. In that everything that Paul wrote, it's an amazing letter about Jesus Christ and what he's done for us. It's an amazing plea for us to die to self and live for God. And all of it was to address the fact that two ladies just couldn't seem to get along. And as Paul makes his way through this letter, every time he has an opportunity to offer up the solution, you see, Paul just didn't talk about the problem. Every time he addresses the solution, it's Christ. It's Jesus. All through the New Testament, we find this plea for unity. It is more than a plea. It's an announcement that people cannot live the Christian life unless in their personal relationships they are at unity with one another. And that the church cannot be truly Christian if there are divisions in it. That's pretty heavy. It's pretty big what Peter's trying to get across. Because we think back to those relationships, the master-slave relationship, the husband-wife relationship. You can't be at odds there. You cannot live a worldly life there and expect a blessing from God. Now, there's a lot of divisions in our world today. We must not allow the divisions of society to divide us. We simply cannot allow that to happen. We must find a pathway to unity. Say that again. We can't allow the divisions of society, and there are a bunch, to divide us. How can we be unified? Well, the answer is the same for us as it was for the church at Philippi. The answer is the same as it was for the church at Corinth. The answer is the same as it was for the church at Rome. We need a connection with Jesus Christ. One of the things that I pray for my daughter is that she's able to find a Christian man who loves her the way Jesus loves her. I also pray that she's able to find a Christian man that's better than I am, because I think we all want that. We want somebody who will treat our kids. You'll think about it. You have a daughter? Think about the day when she's walking down that aisle and she's about to commit her life to somebody. Every one of us, as a dad, as a mom, we would want that young man to be in love with Jesus Christ. Our hope would be that that young man loves Jesus even more than he loves our daughter. Because we know if that's the case, our daughter's in good hands. Well, think about the wife you're married to. Think about the husband you're married to. His parents or her parents had the same dream. How are you treating your spouse? How are you treating people in your relationships? See, only Jesus can change us. Only Jesus can allow certain things to happen. In these times of political division and social division, guys, we need to run to Jesus even more. Because Jesus can do what no other person can do. He can unite us. He can bring us together. He can make us one. And without him, it's going to be an impossible task. You know, Peter, he's just covered some tough subjects. He has talked to these Christians about living in subjection to their governments. He's instructed them on how to live within the master-slave relationship, how to live in subjection to their spouses. And then the very next words that we see on the screen, the very next words that we see in the pages of this letter. Now think about the people that were reading it for the first time. They read about Peter talking about our relationship to our government. They read about Peter talking about master-slave relationships, husband-wife relationships. And when you get to that point, you're probably thinking, what's next? What is Peter going to write next? This, right here. This is what he wrote next. To sum up, finally, all of you be harmonious. Be at peace with each other. I want to read you a quote from a book written in 1958, some 62 years ago. Here's the quote. As long as self is the most important thing in the world, there can be no sympathy. There can be no peace. Sympathy depends on the willingness to forget self and to identify oneself with the pains and sorrows of others. And that's the whole thing. That's the whole message that Peter's trying to lay out in front of these Christians. If you're living for yourself, this is impossible for you because you're not going to care about other people. You're not going to care about what's going on in their lives. You're not going to care about what they're facing. You're just going to be concerned about winning the argument or making sure that you're, in your mind, are in first place. We have to get rid of that. We have to get rid of self before we can live this life that Peter is talking about. And I know we live in some tough times right now, but try to imagine what it would be like to be a follower of Christ back in the first century. That's when these words were written. And that's the group of people who received this message for the very first time. A group of first century Christians just struggling to make it through one day after another. And Peter says to them, just look at your relationships, whatever one you want to pick. Be harmonious. Don't return evil with evil. Don't return insult for insult. But instead, be a blessing. Now, we're going to pick up on this thought 2 weeks from tonight. But what I want you to think about between now and 2 weeks from now, what are you doing to bless the lives of others? What are you doing to bless the wife of your spouse? What are you doing to bless the life of the people that you have relationships with? That's the challenge from Peter. Be a blessing. Because of what you know, because of what you... Guys, we've been blessed. We are blessed because we are in Christ. And because of that, we just live differently. We think differently. Because we're not a slave of this world. We belong to Jesus Christ. Maybe tonight you need to start that relationship. That's the most important relationship. That's going to make us better in every other relationship that we have. It begins with Christ. If you need to obey Him tonight by being baptized, I'm going to give you that opportunity. Or if we can pray for you, encourage you in some way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.